This is Karen Lyle with a SailSport Talk spotlight on the world of professional racing. And it has been exactly 1 year since the announcement that Barcelona had secured the venue rights as the host city for the 37th America's Cup. Following the signing of the agreement, work has been ongoing transforming the Port Vale and Port Olympic areas ready to host the competing teams who are setting up bases and will be on site starting this summer. Around the Port Vale, building work is now apace as the construction of the team's bases takes shape. For the teams themselves, winter training has been an intense period with new boats launched, new design ideas coming to fruition, and sailing techniques honed through long hours on the water. The Defender of the America's Cup was the first to receive and launch the exciting new AC-40 yachts in Auckland for the Youth and Women's America's Cup. This will be a very strict one-design format that will reward the talent of the next generation of sailors in the world. Let's listen to what two of these new sailors have to say about these boats. The humming you hear in the background is the sound of these boats foiling at high speeds on the water.
I just can't get enough. It's awesome sailing. It's really fun. I can't wait for more people to get on them, especially youth and the women. They're so fun. They're like a bit of a go-kart. So it's going to be some awesome racing, and I think it's really going to make that big step up in skill sets, which is going to be so good.
Nothing like I've ever sailed. They're foil fast, and the foils are super, super cool to learn about and get a hang of. So just looking forward to keep learning and keep asking questions from the guys and having a bit of fun.
SailGP will be returning to the San Francisco Bay for the final championship race of its third season. I asked Ben Ainsley in San Francisco last year about the currents in the San Francisco Bay and their impact on his racing. Let's listen to his answer.
The currents here are stronger, I think, than pretty much any of the other venues that we go to, and it's quite critical in terms of the effect it has on the wind across the course, and so that's an interesting element to the racing here. But it's always surprising here quite what an impact it has on the wind. As the current changes, it changes inshore first, and it really does impact the breeze, especially along this city shoreline.
SailGP San Francisco will be held on the 6th and 7th of May in San Francisco for the third season championship race. Going into this race, the leaderboard is Australia and Tom Slingsby number 1, New Zealand and Peter Burling number 2, France and Quentin de la Pierre number 3, Emirates Great Britain and Ben Ainsley number 4, Denmark and Nikolai Sehested number 5, Canada and Phil Robertson number 6, United States and Jimmy Spithill number 7, Switzerland number 8 and Spain number 9. But as we have seen in the previous SailGP races this season, anything can happen on the water, so the last race is yet to be won. This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk Spotlight.
All right, thank you for that. And it is 9:40 on a Tuesday out here in San Francisco. Rick Tittle with you, nationally syndicated and around the world on American Forces Network. 9:40 on Tuesdays as we check in, and I co-host this segment with Karen Lyle from SailSportsTalk.com. Karen, how are you? Where are you located today?
Well, I am back in the San Francisco Bay Area, but I have with me a guest who is in Plymouth in England, at the Royal Western Yacht Club, and that's Commodore Chris Arscott. So he is on the phone with me because that's how we're connected.
Thank you, Commodore Arscott. Thank you for joining us. I have to ask, do you ever get down to any Plymouth Argyle matches?
Yeah, but they lost at Wembley the weekend, so it's a bit of a sore subject, I'm afraid.
Sorry that. So Commodore, it's an interesting title, the Royal Western Yacht Club. This goes back to Victorian times, does it not? Can you give us a little history, please?
Yeah, the Royal Western was set up in 1827, so it's probably, I think it's certainly one of the oldest yacht clubs in the world. And it's got a lot of rich history and heritage that goes with that.
Chris, tell us a little bit about one of your prominent races for ocean racing and how that started.
Yeah, in 1960, Blondie Hassler came up with this idea of running a single-handed race from England to America. Most people thought he was absolutely stark-raving mad, and he went around to a lot of a lot of yacht clubs to try to get them to take it on board, and no one would, except the Royal Western Yacht Club. And hence the what was originally referred to as the O-Star, the Observer Single-Handed Transatlantic Race, was run. That was the race between, well, there's only five competitors, Blondie Hassler and Francis Chichester, and so that was in 1960, of which, surprisingly enough, Francis Chichester won because he had the biggest boat. And the first race went from Plymouth, England, to the Ambrose Light just off of New York. And that's been run every 4 years since then, which now goes into Newport, Rhode Island in the States. And we've been doing that every 4 years since 1964. So we've been there a long time now.
Did you grow up on the South Coast? Are you a native of that area?
Yeah, I started dinghy racing at school and raced cadet dinghies at national international level. Then went on from there to race yachts, and we had some success with that. We raced the J80. We won the French national championships in that the place called Morgad in Brittany. We went on from there to Campone and Archibald A35 to do the Commodore's Cup, and we got selected to do that in, I think it was 2010. And I went on to actually be one of only two selectors to select the British Commodore Cup teams in 2012. So we had a bit of success along the way.
Congratulations on your sailing career, and also your second time as Commodore, and that's a historic moment for your club because there's never been a Commodore that's been there twice. And having been a Commodore but not of a club as illustrious as yours, I know that it's a lot of work. Tell me a little bit about what this race looked like on the water, because it got so big that there was another race that came out of it. This is not a visual medium. Describe a little bit how many boats are on the water in this race from Plymouth to New York, and what's happening with that.
Yeah, I mean the race grew and grew till the sort of late 70s, early 80s. It was about a 100-boat race. But it became very much two races in one. One part of the race was the top end professionals, and on the other end were the amateurs. And in 2000, the club made the decision to split the race. So the Transat, which is the professional element of it, we pass that on to a French club, and they run it now as the Transat, and we continue to run the Corinthian, the amateur, which is now the O-Star, and we're running the next edition of that in next year, 2024.
Did you grow up going to Home Park, the Theater of Greens? Because in the early 90s, I got to know Paul Mariner when he was out here with the San Francisco Blackhawks, and he was coaching a little bit. And I know he started at Plymouth Argyle before he became a tractor boy up there at Ipswich Town, a couple other clubs. I think he had like 40 caps, too, for the Three Lions.
Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah, but he came back as the gaffer, too, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. Plymouth Argyle actually are doing incredibly well in the league at the moment. I think they're first or second in the league at the moment, so they're hoping to get promotion next year. They're in the Papa John's Cup final in Wembley, yeah. As I said last weekend, and unfortunately they went down 4-0, and that was a bit of a disappointment. We had 40,000 people from Plymouth went there to watch the match.
Yeah, the Trotters. Yeah, they're right.
That's the way sport.
They're right there with Sheffield Wednesday there in League One. So yeah, fingers crossed for promotion to the Championship.
Yeah, that's certainly what they're hoping. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, what did you go to the SailGP race when it was in Plymouth?
Yes, I did. Plymouth is a magnificent place for that type of racing because Plymouth has got raised, elevated land on three sides around Plymouth Sound, so it makes it a an incredibly good place, probably one of the best places in the world to watch that type of race in. So it was hugely successful.
Was there an association between your yacht club and the race, or was it just completely independent?
It was completely independent. They did it through Plymouth City Council, and the yacht clubs lent a hand with ribs and support boats and that sort of thing, but pretty much done is completely independent, unfortunately.
Do you have any sort of friendly or not so friendly rivalries with other yacht clubs?
Yeah, there's always going to be a bit of friendly rivalry between clubs. We've worked very closely with the Royal Ocean Racing Club over the years. That's gone quite well. We did the first edition in the Royal Western in 1925, and the Royal Ocean Racing Club actually formed within the committee room of the Royal Western after the first Fastnet race, and we've pretty much run the finishing arrangements with the Royal Ocean Racing Club ever since then, although we did slightly diverge because, as you appreciate, the last edition, they decided rather than finishing in Plymouth, going to finish in Cherbourg, which was a great disappointment, and we're now running our own version of the Fastnet race, the Lonely Rock race, which we run from the Solent, from the Royal Victoria Yacht Club at Ryde, around the Fastnet Rock and finishing back in Plymouth. So we're kind of running our own edition of it now, because we believe that the history of the race is actually in the race course itself and not necessarily in the finish. So we're running our own edition, and we're hoping to build that up. I think we had about 12 boats last time we ran it. We'll run it again next year. So we're hoping that will increase again, mainly with a small sort of the Corinthian amateur yachtsman.
Well, and I have to ask, so your race, the route that you ran before the Fastnet changed to what it is today, is the true route. Now, why is that? What is it? Is it the tides and currents? Is it the direction of the wind? Is it the fact that it's a tradition? What are the reasons why you really adhere to that tradition?
Because that was the original race course. All the course records and everything hinge around that. We think it should stay in the place of its origin, coming back to finish at Plymouth, because of course we would do. The problem is extending the finish to Cherbourg puts an extra 90 miles on the race, which obviously it puts an extra 2 or 3 days on the race for the smaller boats. And of course it crosses some of the busiest shipping lanes in the world, which are a problem as well.
What are some of the responsibilities you have as Commodore?
Probably the biggest one is the finances of the club, to make sure the club continues to trade profitably and develop what we're doing at the moment. We're actually developing sailing. We've extended. Because we've always been known for shorthanded yacht racing, we've extended our portfolio on that. We're running a race from Plymouth around Iceland and back to Plymouth this year. We're doing a slightly different version of the Fastnet on every second year. So this year we're running what we call the Fastnet 500, which will start from Plymouth, go around the Fastnet Rock and back to Plymouth, which is 500 miles. So we've got quite a busy program. We've been running the Round Britain and Ireland two-handed race since 1966, and we've been running that every 4 years since then. We slightly altered that this year. We originally had 4 stopover ports. It's kind of unique in as much as we had 4 stopover ports with a 48-hour mandatory stopover at each of those ports. So it kind of makes it a competitive race, but gives it a social element with it. We've now changed that to 3 stopovers because the race has been probably, it takes about 4 weeks. So most people, with all the pressures of domestic life, don't want to spend so much time doing a race. So we've knocked it down to 3 stopovers, which reduces it by about a week. So that continues to be quite successful as well.
Karen, so we have time for
have
one,
plenty to do,
one more question, Karen.
Oh, yes. So how many countries are represented in the competitors that come into your races? Just as I know I'm throwing this question at you, just as an overall guess.
Oh, generally, anywhere up to about a dozen. We have people from all over the world, Americans, Canadians, Australians, French, of course. We have a strong Polish contingent that take part in our races. So a huge spectrum of, you know, there truly are international events still. I think the difference is we're one of the only clubs that run these big, high-profile events with amateur, unpaid staff. Big organisations like the Royal Ocean Racing Club tend to do that all with paid staff, whereas we tend to do it with a small band of very dedicated volunteers.
There he is, Commodore Chris R. Scott of the Royal Western Yacht Club down there in Devon in Plymouth, alongside Karen Lyle from SailsportTalk.com. Thank you both for coming on. Very interesting.
Well, Rick, it is always a pleasure to co-host with you, and thank you so much, Chris, for joining us. We're looking forward to the next time we talk and featuring some of the races that your club sponsors.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I'd love to join you again. Thank you very much for the opportunity.